do this every day.
Open the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue, May 31st, last day of May. So we will do HJR 14 and 13 first. I'd like to move 3046 while we have all our members here. I see Gary. I want to remind Representative Roblin. Is Roblin going to... I'll invite him to come and testify via...
I shared your comment.
We're bartering over bills. Okay, so I'll open a public hearing on SJR 14, SJR 13, Paul Warner, and Majority Leader Dave Hunt of Milwaukee and Oregon City, Clackamas County. There you go. Paul.
Mr. Chair, I have HJR 14. So HJR 14, you've considered several proposals that were Senate joint resolutions. This one came to you from the House in your first hearing on it. What it does is amend the Constitution, modifies the double majority voting requirement. Of course, current law requires double majority for every election except the general election in November. HJR 14 would permit approval of local property tax measures by a majority of voters regardless of turnout for elections held in May or November of each year. So there'd be four elections every 2 years. You also have a dash A4 amendment and A5 amendment we just got from Senator Devlin.
Devlin here.
Mr. Chair, he said he was going to be tied up in his subcommittee. So, but he did leave these with us. The A4s on page 9 is the only change. This changes the Constitution language directly. It avoids a notwithstanding language and just simply says that an election is under... Measure 50, an election held in May or November of any year would not require a double majority. So the A5s are a little different. What they do is you don't have a double majority requirement for May or November, but you cannot submit a property tax proposal in any other election. So under the dash A4s, you can submit a property tax proposal in elections other than May or November, but you have to have a double majority. Under the A5, you cannot submit a property tax measure unless you do it in May and November and don't have to have a double majority. So that's the distinction. The final thing I have for you, just kind of for historical interest, I printed off the ballot title and pro and con arguments to Measure 53, which was on the ballot in May of 1998. Which is when it was referred to by the legislature to the public to modify Measure 50, which of course had just passed just a year before.
Thank you. Some reading material for us.
Okay.
Representative Hunt and Cap Eaton and State Treasurer Randall Edwards, would you like to join? We're doing 13 and 14, so we'll probably focus most on the GO bonds since we're double majoritied out. happy to talk about that one, too.
Sure.
So I get Steve and Grace there from GO bonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Representative Dave Hunt from Clackamas County. And maybe I'll start with 14. Treasurer Edwards is the real expert on 13. The one thing I would note, and Paul, maybe while you're listening, can correct me if I'm wrong, Paul. But I think the proposed Measure 53, which was sent to voters, I believe that was actually would have been a repeal,
right,
of the double majority. So that would be one distinction. I think it's important to make the difference between what was referred out then was a full repeal of the double majority election requirement. That failed 51-49, so actually very close. This is by design a modification of it. It does not repeal it. That is true both in the base bill as well as in either in the proposed amendments. But really trying to give, based on all the experience that we've seen in those intervening years, of K-12 measures and community colleges and roads and vets and police and fire, and the list just goes on and on of all the measures that have gotten a clear majority, 55, 60, 70, 80% yes votes, but have gone down because of the double majority election requirements. I think Oregonians have seen the experience of how it's played out. They might even today pass a full repeal of it, but that is not what this is. This is a modification. The double majority would still apply in elections aside from mayor November. But I think the core issue is, are we going to reward voters for voting and let their will decide elections, or are we going to reward non-voters for staying at home and allow them to veto? I think the vote on HGR 14 coming out of the House may be surprising by how large it is. We had a very large bipartisan supportive vote in favor of it. Actually, that's true of both these bills before you. So unlike some of the bills we've sent over this session, which have had much narrower votes, these two are not among them. So I would definitely urge your support for that. In terms of HGR 13, I definitely want to give credit, and I should say on HGR 14, it's been a pleasure working with Senator Devil and Senator Morse and others for years on this issue, and appreciate the advocacy of members of this committee on that. HGR 13 is really the brainchild of Treasurer Edwards from at least 4 years ago. It was originally introduced by then Representatives Lane Shetterly and Ben Westland when they left the House. Others of us picked it up and have run with it and actually got it passed this year. The core issue here is not whether or not we're going to save money for K-12 capital construction, because based on what the legislature already referred out and voters enacted in setting up the Education Stability Fund and the rollover capital matching account, that question was already decided. The question is, how can those funds be used? And are we just going to distribute cash, which will not have nearly the impact, or will the state be able to issue bonds in order to provide matching funds for K-12 capital construction? This is a huge issue, I think, throughout our state. In all districts, they have crumbling buildings that have huge backlog maintenance. That's true everywhere. I was just at my daughter's school earlier this week, which is a WPA building, and it's just falling apart. In fact, it was on the list that the Oregonian just came out and just publicized of the buildings that in a quake are going to flatten. Fortunately, this is her last year in that building, and she's moving on to a newer building.
That's comforting to everyone.
Yeah, right. So no earthquake for one more month. But we've got a huge issue with all these WPA and even earlier buildings around the state. And then we have a double issue in high-growth districts of having those old buildings plus the need for all this new additional capital construction. This is one key component I think we can do this session. You all have passed over a couple of bills that are going to make a huge step forward in terms of advancing a K-12 capital construction agenda. This is part of that agenda in terms of what the House has passed. And I'll urge your favorable consideration and leave the details to my colleague to the right.
And you've seen the A4s and the A5s on that HJ 14 and spoken to Senator Devlin?
I haven't. And my understanding, Mr. Chair, is that Senator Devlin is most interested in the A4s. Is that your understanding?
I'm trying to. We did talk yesterday afternoon, and
the A4s, if I could reflect, Mr. Chair, attempt to do the exact same thing. And Paul will correct me if I'm wrong here, but the content between the base bill HGR 14A and the dash A4 amendments, the content I believe is exactly the same. The approach, the way the language is done, instead of having a notwithstanding clause as it is in the base bill, the A4 amendments attempt to amend what is already an exception in the double majority requirement. What is now just an exception for general elections and even numbered years, it would expand that to be exceptions in elections held in May or November of any year. I would agree that language is simpler. The one concern, as I actually looked at the amendment this morning, if in fact there has to be 14 pages of text on the ballot in order to have the more simple language, my preference would be the notwithstanding clause, which is much, much shorter. If the ballot could actually just reflect this one line, then I would agree with Senator Devlin that is a simpler approach. So I would just leave it to the wisdom of the wisdom of you, Mr. Chair, and the committee.
Can you, Paul? Can you, Paul? Just talk to John on Legislative Council just on that question, Representative Hunt. the 14-page ballot question for voters and attempts to avoid 14 pages of ballot question. Paul.
Mr. Chair, I did just talk with Joan Robinson, and she said yes, that the ballot would include the language here with the highlighted change, but it would include the as you see it now.
That would be your... Well, that's just... That's too much.
That would be...
Thank you.
That being true, Mr. Chair, I would strongly advocate for the one sentence, even though it begins with the word notwithstanding. I think that's still a stronger approach to just have one sentence. That is actually fairly clear.
I agree. So someone that's involved in this, we're going to try to vote on this bill at 9:30 and have further discussion. Could someone circle back with Representative Devlin? I know he is in a committee somewhere in this building, and just lock in. So I'm going to look at one of the advocates for this or someone from Representative Hunt's office, and if y'all could just have a meeting of the minds. And
I'm happy to go do it myself right now, Mr.
Great.
Chair.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Good. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks.
Appreciate the time. Rand, Ms. Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Kathy Eaton. I'm the governance chair for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. As you know, the League is a nonpartisan grassroots political organization that encourages participation in government. What I have to say today is just a couple of sentences. It's really very simple. We need to give citizens back their rights to a majority vote, and we have to stop awarding folks for not voting. The League encourages people to vote. And when we have people say to us, why should I bother to register? Because it just means that if I want something to increase services for programs for libraries or community colleges or whatever, if not enough people vote, and if I add my name to that register list, it means more people registered. I'm just defeating it, and that certainly is not what we want in a democracy. So we certainly urge you to move this bill forward as simply as possible. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Senator George.
Question for you. I hear from people that are deciding not to participate that they don't participate because they tell us what to do and we ignore it.
Chair Deckard, Senator George. There's not a whole lot we can do about that, Senator George, except to try to have people have less apathy so that they really get engaged. And that's one of the things that the League tries to do is to have people educated about what the issue is and how important it is to vote.
Other questions? Thank you, Ms. Eaton. State Treasurer Randall, I was trying to remember your middle name.
That's
Randall,
right.
Edwards.
I do have a middle name, but you'll have to look it up.
For the record, my name
Steve,
is...
Steve, can we get that?
State
get
Treasurer.
It before he's done. We can do it.
For the record, my name is State Treasurer Randall Thomas Edwards. I'm here to testify in favor of HDR 13, although I guess I can't help myself to comment on HDR 14. It's almost like Groundhog's Day. I sat on the Revenue Committee when we referred out, I think that was that ballot measure 53, right? And if you recall, that was because ballot measure 47 had passed, and the challenge for the legislature was how to make that work, and we ended up going back to the voters with ballot measure 50, and then and we took that double majority or supermajority out, and then had that referred, and much of the same arguments were made. And I do believe, as you heard from Representative Hunt, that we now have the experience to show that it is not in the benefit of the voters that this hurdle has been put in place and in the Constitution. And I think you found a reasonable compromise here in the sense of you're not changing the will, you're just allowing a few more opportunities to vote where there can be a majority that can express their will. That should be the case. And there's been too many measures failed just because they've had well over the majority supported, but not the second majority, which is the turnout, which in my mind has been, as a League of Women Voters, unfair to those who have voted. I'm here to actually, again, testify in support also of HDR 13. Just to give you a little background, there was a study done in 2001 by the Secretary of State's Audits Division, and at that time the state had well over $9 billion in public infrastructure around our public schools in the state. Certainly that number is higher today. But that report came out with some very startling news to the state at the time, and many of us were already experiencing this firsthand, and that was the deterioration of our schools, the need to modernize them, and, of course, fast-growing districts, which were unable to keep up with the need. At the time, again, 2001, I want to keep underscoring that, that's 6 years ago, and certainly the costs have risen. But at that time, they found there was about a $2.4 billion price tag in deferred maintenance and renewal costs in our public school system. There were also enormous number of concerns regarding just the fiscal health of these buildings. And certainly as we go forward, the need to look at building new buildings that are much more environmentally friendly has also got to be included in any look into the future as we modernize and build new buildings. So in my view, we've got an enormous financial burden facing Oregon, and in sitting in your position, the debate has always been about how to fund the operational side. And yet I would submit that now that we as a state fund most of, if not all of, the operational budget, that the capital side is equally important and has risen to the point where we have a major financial need. And the question is, how do we meet that? HGR 13 is really a tool to help meet that need. It is simply the lowest cost of financing that the state could provide to help partner with school districts in financing schools. The state currently pays $0 towards the capital construction of schools. This would be the financial tool using general obligation bonding authority of the state. That requires a vote of the people. General obligation bonds, we have a number of programs in the Constitution. There's a prohibition in the Constitution for the state incurring debt, so we have set up these bonding programs outside of that exception, and hence that's why we have to go to the voters. And they've accepted many, many programs, transportation, housing, etc. This will just add another section to the Constitution to allow that. It defers in the end, it does give you the opportunity to use this as a tool, assuming we get to the voters and pass it out of here and get it to the voters and they pass it. But I truly believe that we can make a strong argument that this is the right thing for the state. It will be incumbent upon future legislatures to come up with the financing to match that. I know that, as Dave Hunt said, there's a in the Constitution, we've already set up with the Education Stability Fund, a school capital matching fund that is going to fill once the school stability fund's filled, in which last estimates I saw, within the next 2 to 3 years, we should start seeing money flow to the capital fund. That could be one of the sources to help finance these bonds. But I do believe we can no longer wait to look at this long-term need of our schools, the quality of our schools, the health of them, and the need for making sure our children have that modernized school is paramount. And by the way, this is not a rural-urban problem. It is an Oregon problem. I've gone all across Oregon. You can be on the coast. You could be in Beaverton. You can be anywhere in the state, and you see the same problem, a lack of money, basically, to finance these schools. And the property tax system, and that was something else that came out of this report, the local property tax base cannot continue to support what are the demands today and that growing price tag. So it's even more incumbent upon us as a state to step up, as Washington State does, to help them in meeting their capital needs. We need to do the same in this state. And that's really, this is a very simple question. Should Oregon have a tool to help finance in the future school capital projects? The answer is yes. This is a very easy bill, in my opinion, and something we need to have been doing for some time. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thanks. Questions for the treasurer, Senator George.
Treasurer Edwards. We have in place, and as was just mentioned, we had the report from geology on the seismic preparedness.
Correct.
And the lack thereof. So we have that program and this one. How do you see them fitting together? I mean, because many of the buildings that were just described, like Representative Hunt, for example,
right,
that building would, in fact, receive funding from the seismic preparedness bonds.
Right. And I think that that's a really good question. I do believe, you know, you, the policymakers, have to decide, you know, given this is a tool to allow you to do you could do seismic with it, but you already have that in the Constitution. This is actually expanding to allow us to match for fast-growing districts, other modernizations that are non-seismic. So I think that would be a question that future legislature would have to balance. It's hard to pit the two together because I think they're both important. And the first one out of the chute was seismic. Now it's really time to, I think, to expand that and then have a debate about how do we long-term finance that. And it's an ongoing debate. You know, there are people in this room who I've spoken to over the years. Certainly the priority is to operate our schools. You got to make sure we have enough adequate teachers, supplies, et cetera, to give the quality education. And the capital piece has been put on the back burner, primarily because we've been trying to catch up with just operating. We're getting closer to that, although I still contend we need to continue to look at that in the long term. The quality education model suggests we're still behind on that front. But the capital piece continues to be an enormously important part of this. You would be hard-pressed to find a business that would run itself like this where you're not watching the capital side of your costs continue to escalate and yet ignore them at the peril of the whole operation. So I think this would be a complement to what has been passed already by the voters.
Are you concerned at all? When I first looked at this idea years ago, I really liked it. The more time I've spend here and look at the calls on the state budget and the state of post-secondary and higher education in terms of where we fund it. And now we're looking at can we begin to really do capital on the community college side. And that's the only fear that I have is that we pass it, voters pass this, and it is we have a structural budget deficit I think that many folks nod is here and a growing problem in Oregon in terms of our revenue streams and the calls in the state budget. And so if we pass this, voters pass it, it has just been another large capital entity that will be at the state to do capital projects. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how your post-secondary system would fare in that,
right,
or if you've just created a tougher environment for operating side for education on the operating side.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that concern. I mean, certainly we have challenges right now to meet the capital needs of Oregon without this. And you're debating right now what to do with higher ed. As we've looked at this, we do have capacity to meet the needs of much of what you're debating right now. It's a policy question of how do you afford it. I think it's equally important, and it may be in the end, if I read between the lines, this is another need. Clearly, there's a need out there, and we as a state have a responsibility that was given to us by the voters with the passage of Measure 5 to fund schools to operate them. Post 5, in my mind, we also now have that equal responsibility to look at the capital side. So whether we like it or not, we have something at stake here. In the end, I think this helps build another need and argument for looking at the long-term financial health of the state and the ability to meet the needs of the state, including our K-12 system. This, in my view, would be an additive argument to why we need to look at the things you've been looking at, Mr. Chair, which is the long-term revenue picture of the state and how do we make sure we're going to meet varying needs. This is equally important in my mind as anything else you're discussing.
Just one more.
Oh, go ahead,
So if you look at, and this might be end up being, you know, HCR 14's up, double majority, looks like we're going to do some form of a construction excise tax, which would be a developer, some
right,
participation by new growth and development. Are you fearful at all, and you're pretty close to the school community in the state, that this might, and I haven't really bought into that argument that it sends the wrong message, but the tried and true method for building schools is pass a bond.
Right.
And that playing field will be really different if HCR 14 passes.
Right.
What's our Senate bill number? 1036. That looks like it's going to pass, which is the capital the construction excise. And I just wonder how this all plays together for that voter who is used to or perhaps is used to passing a bond to fund school construction and now...
My time to leave.
is that a concern that you would have?
No, I think in this case, you're You're asking a pretty simple question. Should the state help pay for? And by the way, if we get this authority, it cannot go for operation money. I mean, when you sell a bond, in fact, locally, when you sell a bond for capital needs, the covenants on those bonds prohibit you, at least for the tax benefit of that, not to use this for operational purposes. So it would have to be for capital. I don't think this would have would be intertwined and that voter would be confused. I think that the issue is you're trying to allow local school districts a little more flexibility in asking voters for their ability to pay for what they can. This is a compliment in the end, which my hope is and view would be that this would be passed out of here, passed by the voters, and you allow, ultimately, this is what contemplates behind this bill, is that there's a cost sharing. It's not totally void of local governments or school districts paying for their costs, and they do need skin in the game, and I do believe you'd still would go to the voters. This would just give the state the authority to help match that and lower the cost locally, which, again, is one of the problems. Washington State does this. They have a grant program. They help. And if you go to their schools, they're in much better shape than ours, by far.
Do you know, just offhand, what percent of the Washington program, of their school construction, is funded through this, through the GO bonding?
I don't. Sorry.
Interesting.
I'll see if I can find that out.
Senator George.
Mr. Chairman, this is a comment, but then I'll ask for your comments, if you would. When we ask the question, the voters, do you want to make an effort to deal with seismic preparedness? The answer was overwhelmingly yes. I think that's the same question we're going to ask here. Do you believe that it's important for the state to get involved in providing quality buildings, for schools? The very fact that, it refers the proposal to the people for their approval or rejection. I covet that kind of input from the voters, and I think that's what we would be doing clearly here. I may have a little heartburn with 14 because of a different issue. In other words, they already spoke. But here we're asking them, what do you think about this? Is it, and I hate to use this, a tool in the toolbox. We're not required to go bond this. But, would you give us that option if we need to? Okay, so you have to not take that.
Yes, I think that's basically the question you're asking. Should you have the tool? And this is the most cost-effective tool if you're going to leverage yourself to do that. So it doesn't, you can still have debates about where you get the money to help you, whether you do but use this or not. That's another question, but it gives you that opportunity. And there's only one way to do that, and that's to get to the voters and ask them that question.
Other, Senator Moreau.
Yeah, thank you for bringing this proposal to us. It's something I've thought about a lot. When before Measure 5, there was a great disparity in school funding from the state. And since that time, it's been equalized to a large degree for operations, but there's still a very great disparity in terms of capital.
Correct.
I happen to represent the second poorest school district in the state, David Douglas.
People don't know that, do they?
They don't.
Yeah.
But in terms of property tax value per pupil, they're the second poorest in the state. They have tremendous capital needs, and yet when we ask our voters to pay for capital needs, they have to tax themselves much more heavily per home than in other districts that have greater wealth. This proposal you have helps get at that problem and perhaps spread things a little more equally across the state. It's not fair that a homeowner in David Douglas who loves his schools should have to tax himself 10 times as much for the same capital need as in a wealthy district, and that is the case currently.
Just to remind the listeners, Senator, you're talking about somebody, a school district in Multnomah County, and I think there's a perception that Multnomah County is doing really well, or in the Portland sphere, your dead spot. Your school districts and others all over the state that have that exact problem. You could be out in a rural community saying the same thing. So it is a problem. It's a huge problem. And, of course, the chair has got another problem, which is growing school district and space and trying to build new schools. And of course, one of the problems and the outcome has been building these big box schools that are really a tough thing to really have a quality education in. It becomes cost effective. Build it as big as you can, and hence maybe impairing the long-term education.
Other questions for Treasurer Randall Thomas Edwards? thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Steve, I don't have the sign-up sheet for HJR 13. we're not recording. Dave, do you want to come up? If you've signed up, feel free to. This is 13. You coordinating testimony?
Yeah.
We'll go to 14 right after. I just want to. David and Tricia Smith will wrap up HJR 13.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. David Williams with the Oregon School Boards Association, and just to note, my colleagues behind me and Mr. Johnson from Representative Hunt's office did indicate that Senator Devlin would support sticking with the HJR 14A in its simpler form rather than a 14-page ballot. I think we all would appreciate that. Doesn't need repeating, but OSBA strongly supports modification of the double majority, and we'll kind of leave it at that. When it comes to HJR 13, I can't really second enough the comments you heard from the treasurer about the need facing our districts around the state when it comes to capital construction. To highlight that fact, on the November ballot, there was over $2 billion worth of local bond questions put to voters with over a billion, I think it was like 1-3 approved by voters around the state. So to the question about are we concerned that there won't be a local component anymore, that the state will be picking up too much of the share, I would venture to say that the vast majority of capital dollars will still continue to be on the backs of that local bond. But I think Senator Monroe accurately points out some of the troubles when it comes to applying a bond rate to somebody with a very low property wealth district. Senator Monroe also happens to have the district with the largest high school in the state as well. So certainly a lot of unique circumstances, and we couldn't support that enough. I will sort of highlight for the chair, I know this is just a public hearing, I'm having amendments drafted to make a small addition to the bill, and I will sort of lay it at the feet of the committee, that there is another little piece of Measure 47 and 50 that, when it was approved by the voters, that a definition of allowable capital construction for those local bond measures. And there are a substantial amount of portions of the school, things that make a school that local districts cannot purchase with their local bond money. For instance, bookshelves in a library, desks in a classroom. Some of these things, not necessarily books or, sort of smaller items or items that maybe have a 1 or 2 year lifespan, but things that really have a lifespan almost mirroring that of the building. And the measure before you today is a constitutional revision. So it does have the capacity to contain a modification of that definition. And when you are ready for a work session on the bill, I will have the amendments for you, and hopefully a stronger answer to some of the political questions about what does attaching that do to the viability of this measure on the ballot. To note, as a standalone, the viability is very strong for this measure. We, in January, did a poll on a lot of different capital issues, and on a simple question of should the state help in local capital construction by contributing dollars, it was like an 85% poll response. People feel very strongly that in this time when the state is picking up the vast majority of our operational dollars, that maybe they shouldn't necessarily pick up the majority of the capital dollars, but they certainly should help more than they're currently doing.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. That's that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association, a public and private sector union representing 20,000 educational professionals. I'm here in support of both HJR 13 and 14 today. I believe we've testified before the committee this session to our hope that you would address the broad variety of capital funding needs that school districts have, and we are very pleased with the efforts so far this session in providing real help to districts regardless of their circumstance, regardless of whether or not they're high growth districts or declining districts, districts in high poverty areas or areas that could support themselves, and we appreciate that effort very much. We also support the OSBA amendment to HJR 13. We think it's very important to provide the most appropriate measure to the voters that we can this time, and to not include those real capital needs within schools that make schools schools would be an oversight that we would regret. So we hope that you will seriously consider that. We appreciate HJR 14 as it is, and we hope that the committee will move them both very soon. Thank you.
Thanks. And we didn't get your middle names.
That's correct.
Ben, you're giving your middle name. Close the public.
Mr. Chair, who would have guessed they both have the same middle name?
Yeah, that's correct. Okay, we're going to close the public hearing on HJR 13. Ben can come up if he gives us his... he's who we have left on HJR 14. If there's anyone else, quickly just wave. But we're trying to move on here, and we'll probably return to it right before we adjourn to HJR 14.
Wave in the back.
Can we, Senator Westland, and then we'll come to you when we, because I want to move two bills, or at least one bill. Senator Westland.
Thank you. Just briefly, Mr. Chair, for the record, Senator Ben Westland here to certainly lend my support to HJR 13, but maybe to testify more specifically today on HJR 14, the modification of the double majority. I will speak quite bluntly here. I feel the double majority is just plain wrong on every level, not the least of which it is that it discourages what is actually the key to a vibrant democracy, participation. And by its very design, it discourages participation and places a higher weight, a higher value on staying home as opposed to engaging. Somehow that just flies in the face of one person, one vote, as I understand the spirit of our representative democracy. I mean, and it's particularly, I think, devastating to participation and supporting the values and needs at the local level in our local communities. I mean, this is everything, not just schools, it's swimming pools and parks and whatever a community deems, you know, is appropriate for its community. And you look at this in terms of where we are. These local measures are ever increasingly important to supporting the infrastructure of our communities. You look at Oregon's volatile, most volatile revenue structure in the nation, my back-of-the-envelope numbers, and these are shared by some people smarter than I, that Oregon has a structural deficit of approximately $1.5 billion in our general fund. I mean, it is no coincidence that as our tax level average to the nation is right at, pick your number, 45 to 47, it's no coincidence that we fund our judges 50 out of 50, our higher ed at 50 out of 50, our community colleges at 47 out of 50, drug and alcohol per capita at 38 out of 50, and we are funding approximately, you know, appurtenant to our funding level from the general fund, which is why local participation and local infrastructure needs are increasingly needing to be met by local funding measures. This is where I think the double majority actually stifles the will of the people at the local level. We can go through all the same numbers that you know and I know about how many communities, you know, have tried to pass sheriff's levies or pool levies or fire bond levies, and they go down, not by lack of a majority, but by lack of a double majority. So, Mr. Chair, I am just very much in favor of HJR 14. I appreciate you hearing my comments and certainly want to lend my support to HJR 13 as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Questions for Senator Ben Whatley Westland. I'll make it up.
You know, let's just clear this up right now, because my real middle name is John. So, I mean, it's a lot, unless you're supposed to have, you
ben
know,
John
some
Westland.
Type of... by the way, Mr. Chair, what is your middle name?
I refuse to answer that question.
Incriminating himself. I appreciate
Patrick.
It.
Patrick. Close, recess the hearing on, thank you, SJR 14, HJR 14. We will come back to that. When Senator Burdick arrives, probably in 15 minutes, or when she arrives. Open a work session on House Bill 2210, and I'm going to ask Gallagher or Doherty, one of y'all to come up and talk about the amendment you're working on. Let's see, who? Where's, do you want to come up, Mike? I'm looking for Vant Hoff, someone from the executive team, or one of you guys. And someone here from the wheat corn issue. Those are the three issues. Anyone on wheat, corn? Okay, great. These are the three issues remaining. Brian, do you want to talk about the amendment you are working on?
Good morning, Chair Deckard, members of the committee. Brian Doherty, representing the Western States Petroleum Association. I had testified in several committees about our concern about having the governor right to suspend these biofuel regulations if there is a technical or economic reason to do so. We thought we had a solution to this in Chairman Avakian's committee, and that was there was an existing ORS section. What we determined that I understand from Mr. Vant Hoff of the governor's office is that the attorney general does not believe it's likely that they can use that existing language for a situation such as we talked to you about in Eastern Oregon. That is that most of Eastern Oregon is fed from Pasco and Boise terminals. Those terminals may not be able to be ready at the time the trigger for the ethanol mandate occurs, and we thought we wanted to have some flexibility for the governor to recognize that. The amendment I have is contained in an amendment that was not passed in Senator Avakian's committee, House Bill 2210-B10. It needs some modification, which I've wrote out here today, that would do two things in addition. I'd be glad to read the language, but I think more importantly I've added something that says the suspension may be limited to geographic regions of the state, so you don't have to suspend it statewide if the problem is really just Eastern Oregon. And it'll have a section that is repealed. I listed it to be repealed on December 31st, 2010. That was at the request of Representative Dingfelter, who felt, and Senator Bakken both feel that this is an appropriate amendment. We are looking at a vehicle. If it is not in 2210, we're looking at a vehicle, House Bill 3488, that is in Representative Barnhart's committee. It has a relating clause that would fit similar to this. We could try and amend it over there and bring it across, or the quickest way would be to amend it into 2210, in my opinion. And we have a draft for it to go in from legislative council that was not passed by a committee, and we need to do some amendment to it to add the two things I just mentioned. In order to do this.
Questions for Mr. Doherty, Senator George.
Mr. Doherty, almost every night you turn on a television if you're doing that, and you see a commercial in which petroleum companies are talking about how much they support alternative energy. Ask them if you would back off on the commercials and divert the money to get that plant ready to receive this.
I'll do so.
Thank you.
Senator George.
And let us know how that goes when you make that call.
I love it.
Other questions? Mike Graney.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Record Mike Graney, Director of the Department of Energy. There's wanted to mention the other two issues that you had talked about, the producer tax credit for corn and for wheat, the concerns that had been raised about the impact those could have. And House Revenue Committee yesterday amended Senate Bill 814, and by doing that, they changed the provision on those two incentives in House Bill 2210 so that corn grain would not qualify for the producer tax credit, and wheat grain would be delayed 2 years for the tax credit. And the distinction...
You want to come out?
The distinction is...
We know about corn, so let's...
If cellulosic ethanol becomes viable, then the corn stalks, corn stubble, wheat straw, would still qualify for the producer tax credit. And this was a consensus amendment from the corn growers, dairymen who are concerned about competing use to feed, and the wheat community that Tammy represents, as well as the people who supported the original tax credit in the bill. And that was amended into House Bill 814. That will go to the House floor and then come back to you for concurrence. I think the underlying bill had a property assessment measure in it.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Tammy Denny. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Wheat Growers League, and we do support the amendment that was passed yesterday that Director Graney just referenced in regards to the delay, of the wheat tax incentive until January 2009.
And the rationale for it was?
We had met with the export community, and there were several expressions of concern about the potential impact to export markets, and wanted to give our industry time to evaluate the potential concerns and determine within the industry whether or not that truly is going to be an impact for that 90 cents to then take place and be effective in January 2009.
Great. Questions for this panel?
And Mr. Chairman, on the emergency authority, if I might briefly, too, we are working with the Attorney General's office on that. There's actually two different sections of ORS. One is the emergency authority of the governor specific to energy in ORS Chapter 176, but then there's much broader emergency authority for general emergencies under ORS Chapter 401. And we think if legislation is necessary, it would be better to do it in a different bill, like House Bill 3488. But we can work with Mr. Doherty and the Attorney General's office in the meantime, but we would prefer that you leave House Bill 2210 unchanged in that regard.
Questions for this panel? Thank you very much. Thank you. Close the work session on Senate Bill, House Bill 2210. Let's try to move 30. Let's try to move the pipeline bill. If we can do it quickly, at 9:45, I have to go to meet the president of Tuscany or the governor of Tuscany. So we're trying to get these two done. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3046. Gary, feel free to bring your team up. HDR 14, I believe. I'm not sure where.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Do you want me to go ahead, or do you want staff to make it?
I think we're going to move quick.
Great. Gary Bauer, representing Northwest Natural. With me is Mr. Robert Manicky, an attorney with Stoll Reeves, who specializes in taxes, in case you have any technical questions. I also, along with my testimony, am passing out some testimony of Coos County Commissioner Nikki Witte, who was unable to be here this morning, but wanted you to know that they definitely support this activity. I'll be very brief. What House Bill 3046 does is exempt the natural gas pipeline that was constructed and owned by Coos County from ad valorem property taxation. Northwest Natural built a distribution system in Coos County, and we do pay taxes on that. Quick history, as you probably recall, is for many decades, Coos County tried to figure out a way to get natural gas to the area. Every time we looked at it, as well as others, it never penciled out. And so the county eventually came to the legislature, received some financial support from the legislature, passed bonds on its own, and went forward and eventually constructed that. We, Northwest Natural, have an agreement with the county to build the distribution system, which we have done, and also an agreement with the county to operate and maintain the pipeline for them. In March of 2006, the Oregon Supreme Court issued a ruling related to a Klamath Falls energy facility owned by the city, but is owned and or is managed and operated by PPM Energy. And in that case, they indicated that because it was a centrally assessed entity under Oregon law, that and they used that facility, that they should pay property taxes on that facility. Our operation is different. We are simply moving a very small amount of gas to the pipeline, and then our agreement with the county is not to basically profit off of that, but basically to manage it at about $24,000 a year. So we're not profiting. It's at cost. And I can continue if you'd like.
Anything you'd like to add? I would like to. Questions for this pretty straightforward bill. Questions for this committee or this panel. Great. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
Thank you for coming down from Portland. Close the public hearing. Anyone else on 3046? close the public hearing on House Bill 3046, open a work session on House Bill 3046.
Mr. Chairman, move House Bill 3046 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved House Bill 3046 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Objections. So ordered. Senator Verger would be a natural carrier of that bill. Thank you, Mary. Reopen a public hearing on HJR 14 and ask Greg Wasson and Scott Winkles from the cities, and I've got 4 minutes to either move the bill or not move the bill today. Mr. Wasson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. My name is Greg Wasson. I'm founder and executive secretary of the Committee for Petition Rights. The discussion of 14, I think, is misplaced. The question is not whether it's a good idea to encourage non-participation, but whether or not the anti-government people are going to let what is their last silver bullet against taxes go away, and I don't think they're going to. Lane County had the income tax proposal, and the people that were against it, foreign committee, said, we said no. And I think the same thing's going to happen on the state level. When the initiative, or when the double majority was presented standalone by initiative in 1996, it was rejected 88-12. Yet when the legislature referred the double majority out to a second standalone vote, it was approved 51-49. So where King Mike could turn everything to gold, the legislature has a different ability. I would point out that Washington's supermajority is on the ballot this November, and I think that you should watch that and see whether or not Washington voters agree. I think that the way to get the double majority repealed or amended is to sweeten it by saying to the voters, if you will give us this additional taxing authority, we will allow you to put statutory initiatives on the ballot every November. And I don't have time to... The problem with the initiative is that it was written by William S. Wren to allow a small group of people to control and manipulate the government. And it has never been substantially rewritten. And so we should not be surprised that it allows a small group of people to control and manipulate the government. And until that basic structure is rewritten, the initiative is not going to work smoothly. And I think that so this is getting two birds with one stone. It would improve, it would sweeten the repeal of the double majority and start us down the road to rewriting the initiative amendment. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Wasson. Appreciate our meetings on the subject and your testimony today. Questions for Mr. Wasson? Great. Scott?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Scott Joseph Winkles, representing the League of Oregon Cities, appearing in support of HJR 14. Out of respect for your time, I will be exceedingly brief. I would like to call the committee's attention to the single-page handout. I will not go through the comprehensive study. And draw your attention to the bottom of the page of the West Lynn, the last West Lynn police levy. Here we have a situation where 78% of the turnout voted in favor of renewing West Lynn's police services levy, with 22% in opposition. This is 9% of the eligible voters of the city of West Lynn making the determination that city will suffer a $1.5 million cut to their police services. We needed a better example of why we needed to reform the double majority system. I can't think of a better one.
Thank you.
You want to move it today, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, and I have someone waiting for it. Okay. Close the public hearing on HJR 14. That is all the testimony we have. Open a work session on HJR 14.
Chair, you prefer the dash 4?
I think after they all huddled, the ones who actually want this to pass, and they want, I think, the decision with Senator Devlin, the sponsor, is just the House bill.
Without the dash 4 amendment?
Not the dash 4s, just the House bill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Please.
Mr.
Chair, I would move HJR 14A to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Monroe has moved HJR 4A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Barbara, on her very last day with us, has been so incredible through the years. Brought her son down, an Iraq War veteran in the Green Zone, and now a law student at U of O. So this is glad I looked up and saw Barbara there. We'll miss you, Barbara, and thank you so much for all the help through the years. Today is her last day with us. Barbara, will you please call the roll?
Hi.
No.
Hi.
No.
Vote aye. The motion carries 3-2.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Served notice to the possible minority report.
And Senator Starr has served notice that there could be a minority report on HJR 14. The motion does pass, and we are adjourned, and we will not meet on Monday. Looks like now that Devlin will carry that bill. So we will try to limit our meetings and bulk up the days that we're going to meet now that all the committees are closing. So we'll have busy agendas, but hopefully not meet every single day.
Next Tuesday will be our next meeting.
Tuesday, and we're looking at Thursday for next week. Close, and thank Barbara for all the help through the years. Okay.